Now on Distinct Nostalgia, we're taking you back to a sitcom that ran for a long time in the 70s and 80s. Made by Thames Television, it starred Hewell Bennett as the intelligent but very grumpy and highly cynical unemployed layabout Shelley. The hugely successful series, created by Peter Tilbury, also starred veteran actress Josephine Tewson and Belinda Sinclair as Shelley's long-suffering wife, Fran. Belinda, who later went on to star in the Channel 5 soap Family Affairs, has rarely given interviews about Shelley, but did decide to chat to Ashley in what is a rather candid interview for Distinct Nostalgia. Enjoy.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Belinda, it's lovely to chat to you, and you had a fantastic career. You've done all sorts of different things. But perhaps the thing that a lot of people will remember you for a long period of time, because it did last a long time, actually, as comedies go, was the ITV sitcom, which went out on a Sunday night, I think it was, in the late 1970s and early 80s,
yes,
called Shelley.
That's right.
Which, of course, starred yourself and Hal Bennett. And, of course, Josephine Tewson as well.
Yes, who passed away, sadly, recently.
We lost recently, absolutely. So it's a bit of an iconic show in a way, because it was certainly of its time, although I've watched it in recent years, and actually I feel as though it stands the test of time in a way. His moans and groans are actually quite similar to the moans and groans people could have today, really.
Nothing's changed, really.
So just take us back, if you can. How did it all start, and how did you end up getting your part in Shelley?
Well, it's quite interesting, actually, because I was understudying in a West End show called I Love My Wife, which was an American musical starring Richard Beckinsale. And I played, I was understudying the part of Richard Beckinsale's wife. I wasn't understudying it for very long. There were some problems, and the person playing the part left. And so I took over the part. And I think the producers of Shelley were hoping for Richard Beckinsale to play Shelley. And therefore, I could have played his wife. That's sort of how it came about. But very sadly, Richard died. He was a very good friend of mine, and we kept our horses together. It sounds very good, but we kept our horses at the same stables. And we used to go riding together, and I was actually and I looked after his horse when he was working, and he looked after mine when I was working. It worked like that. He was, you know, married with Kate. She was about 7 then. Anyway, he sadly passed away. I'd been riding with him the day before, and I knew he wasn't well. But anyway, he passed away. So I was left high and dry and thought, well, that's the end of that. And then they cast Hal in the part, and I was asked if I still wanted to do it. So, of course, I'm not going to say no. I was thrilled and delighted to do it. And so I joined the company, and Joe Tewson and I were very big buddies. We got on really well. And it was a hard, you know, sitcom with a studio audience is a really hard thing to do. You don't know where to put your performance in a way. And it's funny because I actually was watching with my husband. He loves to shoot around the channels. We were watching Some Mothers Do Have 'Em. And I was explaining to my husband, who's not an actor, he's a musician, but I was explaining the situation of being in a studio with an audience and getting that audience to laugh at the right time and react at the right time, but not interfere with the filming of it. And it's very difficult, because as soon as you have an audience in front of you, you want to play to them, and you mustn't. You must just play with your characters and stay in that. So it was tricky, but really good fun. A lot of fun and a lot of laughs, as you can imagine.
Of course, things have changed in more recent times. Of course, they don't all do it in front of studio audiences now, do they? A lot of the time, there's none of that really at all. Which is a strange would be strange for you, I would think, if you were going back into it. It would be quite weird, wouldn't it?
It would be quite weird. In fact, my sister went to a recording of a quiz show last week at the BBC with the studio audience. And naively, she thought, oh, well, you know, it's an hour-long show. We'll probably be there an hour and a half. She didn't realise that, you know, things go wrong and things have to be redone and retakes. And I think they were in there for about 5 hours. They were pretty shocked. So I know they have studio audiences for quiz shows. And, you know, things like Loose Women and, you know, all those. But you're right, sitcoms, I don't think they do. But they still do have that awful canned laughter, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, we've made some panel shows, radio panel shows. The last one we made actually was during the pandemic. And we didn't really have an audience because you weren't allowed an audience. But luckily, the production team were loud enough to make it sound as though there was an audience. That was all right. That's a great thing about radio, of course. You can you get away with it, can't you?
Yes, definitely.
But going back to those days, just yes. A little bit about Richard Beckinsale.
Yes.
Because we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s, and you say he died around that time.
Yes.
But I don't think people realise how big a name he was. And of course, ITV would be wanting to have him, or Thames would be wanting to have him in another sitcom after the success of Yorkshire's Rising Damp and
yes,
Porridge on
yes.
the BBC. Just to remind us how big he was at that time.
Oh, he was a huge star, absolutely huge star. I mean, you know, with a large fan base as well, and a wonderful actor. I mean, you know, he did really epitomise the goofy guy. You know, he played it so well, the dopey guy in Rising Damp and everything he did. And he was so not like that. He was so sharp. His timing was absolutely on point. You know, he knew how to get a laugh instinctively. And I worked with him on stage. And he was wonderful to work with, of course. But very often at the end of the show, we'd have a meeting or we'd go for a drink in the bar or in the green room or whatever. And he'd say, hey, you know when you say, and he'd pick out a line that either I or somebody else, Ben Cross was in the show, and he'd say, hey, you know when you say that? Well, if you did it like that, I think you might get a better laugh, you know. And he was always right. He was always absolutely on point. He was very clever, super talented, but he was not a goofy guy. He was not that dopey character. He played it brilliantly. He was very sharp, very clever, and a really, really lovely guy.
And so if he'd got the part in Shelley, it would have been another very different role for him, really, wouldn't it? Because it would be very, very interesting to see how he might have played it.
I think he would have been very different. I think, in fact, having done it with Howell, having seen Howell and the way he did it, I'm not even sure that Richard would have been great casting for it, you know. Howell had that edge. He had an edge to him where half the people would love him and half the people would hate him. You know, he was playing a layabout. He was playing, you know, the person that all the right-wing people would say, oh, he just wants to be on the dole because it's easy. And people still say that about people today. It's hideous. But nobody chooses to be unemployed.
He was
really.
An intelligent layabout, though, wasn't he?
He was very intelligent, yes. He had degrees. He could have done. He was a lazy guy. But he was sort of lovable because he pointed out people's failings and loved, you know, you loved him for it. But of course, half the people didn't like him at all. And very often the studio audience would come in absolutely loving him. And once they saw that he wasn't the character, he was an actor, they went out not liking him so much.
Just remind us about Howell then, because he had a very illustrious career. He'd been around a long time, lots of films and all sorts
oh, yeah.
of things. You know, he's known for some people, he's known for Shelley, but he did a lot of things, didn't he?
Yes, he did do a lot of things. He got into trouble making one film. He stood up and said too much about something. I won't go into detail because I don't know the whole story, but I know that sort of polished off his film career for a while. He became rather unpopular and difficult to employ. And I think that's when he went in. Shelley came along just at the right moment for him, I think.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. and you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game. Yeah, know what I mean.
So do your homies got a role in your little? You mean?
Yeah. We all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Look.
We all artists, man. We go. You feel me? We gonna have this like.
Bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
In terms of Shelley, it was a fairly simple show in a way, because it was only a few characters,
yes.
Mainly him and yourself, yeah. and Josephine. It was three of you really, and occasionally other people would come in, you know.
Oh, we had some wonderful guests.
Yeah,
you had
some great guests.
Well.
But yeah. It was quite a simple comedy and a sort of probably quite slow for today in a way. And you had to watch it and you had to listen to what was being said. And it was a Sunday night and it was quite.
You had to concentrate.
Yeah, it was an intelligent comedy, wasn't it? Really?
It was. It was written by Peter Tilbury and he was also a very intelligent bloke, and you had to really listen and concentrate to get the gags. It wasn't slapstick. It wasn't Michael Crawford. You had to listen to what was being said. It was sort of out of the ordinary. It was out there on its own. And in fact, I never see anything about it. Very often they have shows on TV now where they show clips of a whole load of old sitcoms and old shows, and Shelley never comes up. And I always wonder why that is, whether it wasn't that popular. I don't know. It was very popular at the time, but it hasn't stayed. It hasn't been repeated a lot.
Maybe that is because it's probably seen of as, you know, of its day. You know, Thatcher was just coming to power at that time and all
yes.
that kind of thing. It was reflective a little bit of that, wasn't it, in
yes,
a way?
Yes, it was.
You know,
yes.
Just going back to Howell a second, because you mentioned the films.
So yes.
Let me just say a few of the films that he was in. So here we go. Just see
yeah,
these.
They've got The Family Way.
They've got The Family Way,
wasn't
that's
he
right.
with Hayley
yeah.
Mills, that's right.
Yeah, he played Arthur Fitton in The Family Way.
That's right.
I think I interviewed somebody else who was, that was Bill Norton's... film, wasn't it? And I interviewed somebody. Oh, Murray Head, I interviewed, who was in
Oh,
that
Murray Head, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I was interviewed him about that. And he was in
yes.
Buttercup Chain, Loot, Percy, Endless Night.
I don't remember that. The Virgin Short Soldiers, I remember
yeah,
he was in.
That's,
that was,
yeah, that
was...
one, yeah. A Mind to Kill, Misery Harbour, Mary Mother of Jesus, which is a TV film.
To name but a few.
quite a lot.
Twisted
he was
Nerve.
In. Yeah, yeah. And,
yes.
In terms of TV, he was in Doctor Who at one point.
Yeah.
13 Against Fate, quite a couple of Wednesday plays, Play of the Month, Play for Today.
He is
Sweeney.
A very good straight actor.
Yeah, he's done lots of things.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there was something about it that was popular at the time. And as you say, it was fairly serious. A serious comedy in a way, in the sense that you had to be fairly intelligent to sort of understand it. And
yeah.
it was on at a sort of time of the week when, you know, it was sort of latter end of the week before Monday, you know. What
yes.
was it about the storylines? Well, you tell me, maybe you didn't like the storylines, I don't know. But what was it about the storylines which were interesting, do you think?
I think our relationship, our dynamic between us was really worked. And was quite interesting because Fran, my character, was a pretty strong woman and also very intelligent. And I always wondered, why is she staying with this guy who's a layabout? Because I think he had potential, and I think everybody thought he had potential, and everybody thought at any minute he was going to be successful in something, you know? And I think that people got involved with his character and my character as a couple because they wanted to see what the heck was going to happen. How were these people living? And I'm not quite sure how they were living because he was on the dole. I don't know what I was doing. I don't know. Fran never had a job that was ever mentioned.
You were an aspiring writer, though, weren't you?
I was a writer, but I don't think I was a very successful writer. I don't think I was earning money writing or a lot of money. So it was really about his attitude. It was really about Shelley's attitude to the doll, to politics. I think a lot of it was probably nowadays quite politically incorrect. You know, a lot of the things that were mentioned and were talked about. But, you know, the way he went, the way he talked about going and signing on was the way everybody wanted to talk about going and signing on. You know, nobody really wants to do it. Everybody's quite grateful to get the money, but they don't want to have to go there and talk about it. They don't want to have to go and do lots of interviews for jobs that they're overqualified for. And so he said everything that everybody wanted to.
And some of the best scenes, actually, were those scenes where he was either
actually
going
in
for
the dole office.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Dealing with authority in some way.
He always had something intelligent and witty to say, which sort of they didn't quite understand. And they are miserable places. I mean, to be fair, they're really, really miserable places.
Of course.
What also was quite interesting was, as you say, the dynamics between the two of you and the whole issue of the money worries and things like that came up quite a bit.
Yeah,
I found that
quite
fascinating. I think you played that rather well, actually, because again, you know, these are quite they're important things that happen in people's lives, which again we don't really talk about that much these days. I mean, you might see it in some of the soaps occasionally, but very rarely do people actually look at the whole issue of, you know, day to day making
living,
ends meet, if you know what I mean.
Especially at the moment and in the current situation, that, you know, there's many people. People would love to get the dole. I mean, it is just not that simple anymore. From what I understand, it's universal credit and you have to work, wait for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and jump through hoops to get, you know,
exactly. To be honest,
hardly anything
at all. I don't think it was that simple then either, to be fair. If I remember, I mean, I know people thought it was. They tended to think it was. My dad was actually unemployed in the mid-80s. And we were poor as church mice, you know. And there was it was the middle of the miners' strike, and my dad was unemployed during the middle of the miners' strike. So we had all that going on at the same time. And whatever people think of the miners, they were quite wealthy compared to most people of the day. You know what I mean? Which is quite interesting. In terms of you know, that obviously it was again of its time. It was the late '70s, early '80s. I remember the kind of clothes you used to wear as well.
Yes, I've still got some of them.
Have you got some of them? So dungarees and sort of all sorts
of
things.
Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of lovely things. lovely cardies.
Now. Yes. Millions were watching it, and do you realise how many episodes there were of it?
No, not I know I came out. I finished in 1980 because I was pregnant, actually. And I think I'd been playing pregnant in the show, but then I was really pregnant at the end, and so I decided that I'd had enough. But it went on for more episodes after that with him on his own.
How did they write you out?
Do you know what? I can't even remember. I must have left him. I don't know.
Or well, he left. Well, you me. Would leave him eventually. Wouldn't
I,
you?
I chucked him out. I think I chucked him out.
I do remember episodes of him trying to date and things like that. If I remember right.
Yes. Yeah. He moved into a block of flats. He had quite a relationship with the concierge. I can't remember the actor's name now, but. Yeah, they set up.
Or
that,
Warren Clark was in it, wasn't he, for a while? But there were. I'm just telling you how many episodes there were. There were 71 episodes.
Is that right?
In the late '70s, early '80s. So, you know, in those days, they would make lots and lots and lots of episodes, wouldn't they?
Yes, we'd do a couple of series a year.
Yeah.
And you know, there'd be I think 7 or 8 in each series, maybe. So we do sort of 14 episodes a year, and it went on for about 5 years. So that makes sense.
Absolutely, long time. So, so tell us a bit about working with Howell then. What kind of person was he? Because he's an actor that people are fascinated by because he's been around for a long time, and he was quite an important actor around that time. What was he like? How did you compare to other actors you'd worked with?
Do you really want to know?
Of course.
I don't know how much I can say. Well, of course, he's not alive anymore.
Well, it's up to you what you want to say. Don't worry about that.
He was not an easy person to work with. Let's say that. He, I mean, I respected him because he was very clever and very talented, but he wasn't a very warm person. And he really did like a drink. And so we would rehearse from about 9:30 till about 12:30 every day. And then we'd have to stop because he would start getting the shakes and he would need a drink. And so that's where our rehearsal. And then so Joe and I or whoever was guesting, we'd do other stuff in the afternoon. He would only work in the mornings. And it was a big problem, and he knew it was a big problem, and he did everything. I mean, he went off between series. He was always going off to dry out, and he was always going to health spas and keeping the weight down, and, you know, it was a big problem for him. And I had a stepfather who was an alcoholic, so I found this particularly difficult to deal with. I couldn't get too close because I found it too upsetting. And he also smoked like a chimney. Now, we all smoked. Well, I smoked back in the day, but I smoked San Moritz for effect because they had gold on them. So I'd smoke, you know, one or two of those. But he was definitely a chain smoker and would smoke throughout rehearsals. And a lot of our scenes, you may or may not have noticed, were in bed. And I found that particularly difficult. But, you know, I was very professional and he was very professional, but we didn't have a close relationship, let's say that. And thank God for Joe Tewson, who kept us sane and sensible and stopped me freaking out quite a lot.
If you had some chemistry, I don't mean sexual chemistry, but I mean chemistry in terms of you as two people and got on better, do you think it may have been a different kind of show?
I'm not sure because, you know, we were following the script 100%, so, and we were both very professional. And I don't think anybody would have noticed any of this. I mean, he would never say anything. I mean, he was not very encouraging during rehearsals to me as a young actress, but he would never say anything derogatory or, you know, I mean, he was an okay guy. We just didn't hit it off that well. But funnily enough, I met him years later. I think it was at Teddington. I think I was doing an episode of The Bill. And he was doing something else there. And we happened to meet in the canteen at lunchtime. And I thought, oh, my God, there's Hal Bennett. And suddenly, I was his long-lost friend, and he was so happy to see me, and we had lunch together, and he was really warm and really affectionate, and I thought, my God, have I misjudged him all this time? And I think I probably did, and I think the reason he was the way he was it was so important to him, Shelley, and he was so in the spotlight. It all rested on him, mostly. I mean, I was just there to feed him the gags, really. I mean, I was feeding the cue lines, and so was Joe. And it was, the laughs were really down to him, you know. And very often, if I got a big laugh, it would be cut. He sort of wanted it, but he also found it very stressful. And that's the way he was. And it wasn't the happiest of jobs. But I had just met my future husband, and so I was madly in love, and I sort of went home to lots of love and encouragement and support. So it wasn't that difficult, but it wasn't fun, you know. I've done more fun things.
I wonder, you know, you wonder, don't you, if that all had to do with the alcohol or the pressure of the part was also impacted that as well, because it was a big, you say, you know, the viewing figures were pretty good, very, very good, in fact.
Yes, huge.
And everyone would have known him and seen him. I mean, you know, we only got to think about somebody else who also had similar problems with drink, which it was Eutha Joyce and Georgia Mildred.
Yes.
And you know, I don't know the full story, but I gather that, you know, playing Mildred for such a long time, being a huge part, and everyone recognizing her, put a lot of pressure on her, you know, to me.
Yes, of course. I mean, it is a very pressured thing to do, that kind, as I say, with a studio audience and, you know, constrained by the time and the cameras and the, you know, it is very stressful. I understood that, but I suppose I always thought, oh my God, it would have been so much more fun with Richard. You know, he didn't feel pressure like that in the same way.
Different kind of person, yeah, absolutely.
Different kind of person, yeah. So it would have been a very different experience. But I mean, I know that I couldn't go anywhere at the time. I couldn't walk down the street at the time. It was so popular. I was stopped every 2 minutes for autographs and what have you. I remember trying to go shopping with my son at one point and having to abandon the whole mission and going to a carnival in Portobello 1 year and getting mobbed and, you know, losing touch with my family because I was being carried off somewhere else. You know, it was very popular. And if I felt that, I'm sure he felt it 100% more. And he got a lot more attention than I did.
And Ashley's chat with Belinda Sinclair, who played Fran in Shelley, continues on Distinct Nostalgia in just a few minutes.
We're kicking off a whole new season of Gems from Distinct Nostalgia. As we remember the great TV and films of the past with the people who were there. Here's just some of the delights we have in store for Christmas, New Year, and early 2024.
It was a comedy about language. It wasn't really a comedy about race or religion or stereotypes. It was a sitcom built on puns and mispronunciation of the English language. And it put Barry back on top, you know, from somebody who had been a star to go in, you know, and being on the dole. He was now back in front of 18 million viewers every week.
He was a huge TV star for years. Ashley talks to Daniel Ward, the writer of a new book about the intriguing life of Barry Evans. And we're reuniting three of the original cast of Mind Your Language.
Hello, I'm George Camilla and I play Giovanni, the Italian student.
Hello, I'm Françoise Pascal and I play Daniel Favre.
Hello, my name is Pixen Lim. I play Chung Su Lee, who was a student in China and great follower of Chairman Mao.
Staying with ITV, we're also remembering the classic late-night sitcom, Shelley.
The way he talked about going and signing on was the way everybody wanted to talk about going and signing on. You know, nobody really wants to do it. Everybody's quite grateful to get the money, but they don't want to have to do lots of interviews for jobs that they're overqualified for. And so he said everything that everybody wanted to.
Belinda Sinclair gives us an insight into working with Hal Bennett and Josephine Tewson. And we're back at 165 Eaton Place as we go upstairs, downstairs.
So they were absolutely scrupulous about period detail. On rare occasion, they did get something wrong. They would get hundreds of letters saying they would never have put that cup on that particular saucer or whatever it was. There was painstaking about all of that.
Jacqueline Tong played Daisy in the classic period drama, and she'll be recalling great memories of her legendary co-stars. Veteran actor Melvin Hayes joins us from his home on the Isle of Wight with some great anecdotes from over 70 years in show business.
On the Monday morning, we got phone calls saying, don't come to Yorkshire, stay exactly where you are. The rest of it was canned. And they paid us six episodes on all our expenses. And it was voted the worst TV series ever made.
And then we're chatting behind the camera with prolific TV director Royston Mayo, whose credits include This Is Your Life, Opportunity Knocks, Tommy Cooper and Les Dawson.
They did his life in America and then gave him his book and said, hey, Andrews, this is your life. It's also your show. That was a wonderful line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And George Layton talks candidly about his friend Richard O'Sullivan, as well as his own writing credits.
I wrote 13 Robin's Nests and a Christmas episode. I mean, I didn't create that series, but I did it with the same passion as if I had done, which got up Tony Britton's nose a bit. You know, I don't think he didn't like me coming with my notes to a part he'd been playing for several years.
Actor Jonathan Kidd looks back over an amazing career, including voicing some iconic TV ads.
I don't know why there was a complaint, but the huge furore made sure that Ferrero Rocher was forever emblazoned, was ever stuck in everybody's head from then on, because everybody was looking for the commercial.
We're also remembering some classics of kids' TV.
Why don't you? Why don't you? Why don't you just switch off your television set and go out and do something less boring instead? Sitting at home, watch TV, turn it off, no good for me, etc., etc. And thank God it was changed for when I was on it. But that's the theme tune that everyone remembers, and that's the theme tune that was sung to me on most buses on the way to school and walking through town for a good couple of years after I finished.
That's Phil Noble, one of the original Liverpool gang on Why Don't You? To come, we're behind the scenes on The Bill, meeting Wurzel Gummidge's real child star friend, spending time with Zippy and George from Rainbow, and going back to Wentworth with members of the original cast of Prisoner Cell Block H. These new shows and a 200-hour-plus back catalogue are available on Distinct Nostalgia. Search by scrolling up and down in the feed wherever you get your podcasts. A new year and a new season of shows on Distinct Nostalgia.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Well, I was a little boy because I was born in 1972. So around that time, I was like 8, 9, 10, 11 kind of thing. And it sort of, I used to watch it and enjoy it, but it went over my head a bit in a way.
Of course.
Some of it I got it as I got older. I got it. I get it a lot more now when I've seen it later on. But there were some, you know, there was some really nice comedy in it.
Yes, there was.
Some really great stories. And my favourite bit really was when the three of you would talk, when Josephine's character would come round from next door. She was great. She added some great lines to it and extra bits and bobs to it. Tell us a little bit about that dynamic and how the three of you worked, but also a bit about her as an actor, because she was a great, wasn't she?
She was a great. Yeah, she was very underrated, in fact. I mean, she worked nonstop, but she was very professional, knew exactly what she was doing and was a very sort of sardonic type of woman anyway. And so I think Peter, who was writing, began writing for her as he began writing for me. I don't think writers can help doing that. Once the characters have sort of, or the actors have embodied the characters, then it's natural for them to, oh, it'd be great if she said that, or it'd be great if she did that. And so it develops that way. But Jo was a great calming influence on both Howell and I think. And the dynamic between the three of us was great because it was all kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink between her and I. Oh, he's going to say this now. And she'd, you know, it was a bit like that. And he was a bit, oh my God, the only bloke with these two strong women giving him a hard time, you know. So he could play off that poor little Shelley, you know.
And of course, she was extremely experienced, been around a long, long time. So I suppose that helped in terms of him and how he saw things as well, in terms of having somebody he really respected, I presume.
Yes. Well, maybe. I'm not sure if he really respected her. I don't think he really realised how much she was doing. He was too centred on himself and what he was doing. He didn't really, I don't think he really appreciated either what I did or what she did. We were just there to support him. But actually, I think we both did quite a lot to make him look good.
How much like the character was he, do you think, as a person?
I don't think much like the character, really. No. I mean, he certainly wasn't as bright as the character. He was an actor, you know. He's not... He had very good timing, and he was very intelligent in his performance, but as a person, I don't think he really was like Shelley at all. I think he was too... I think Shelley was much more confident and much more assured, self-assured. Howell was not like... Howell was... You know, I think when you have alcohol, you're not really in touch with your own self as much as Shelley was written to be. Does that make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense. The other thing about it, I said earlier on that it was simple in the sense that it was you know, a few characters and not a great deal happens action-wise.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there wasn't much of a set, was there, really? It was the house. And occasionally they went out, very occasionally, but not much.
We didn't do much filming.
No.
It wasn't a lot of location filming, no, unfortunately. We had our set. Oh, there was the cafe. There was always the caf. I remember, in fact, one scene in the caf, they had a new girl on the till, and she was very young.
Wasn't that
and
Gillian
Telfus?
I think
it was her first job. I think she'd only done extra work before.
Wasn't it Gillian Telfus?
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. It was Gillian Telfus. Yeah. She was like teenage or something. Very pretty, very, you know, no makeup. She was just, oh, all right, then, yeah. She was great. She was great, but it makes me laugh when I see her now, my God.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You were saying you had some interesting guests over the years. Tell us a bit about some of the people who came in. Can you remember?
Who did we have? We had Nick LaPrevost, if you know him. Really lovely actor. Oh, gosh, don't ask me about names. I can't remember names. Their faces float in front of me and the names don't come. But we did have some lovely... Rowena Cooper. She was a lovely actress. I think she did a series playing a cross-dresser, transsexual, I think she was playing, or transgender series she made playing a bloke, Rowena Cooper. Who else did we have? We had so many people come in and do little bits. Everybody wanted to do it. All my friends wanted to do guest parts. You know?
John Barron was in it at one point.
John Barron, yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, you've probably got all the names right there in front of you. You're asking me and I'm searching my brain, the cobwebs. I'm trying to find them.
Sylvia Kay played his mum.
Sylvia Kay, there you go. Yeah, she was good. She played his mother, yes.
And then you had David
Pugh. As you said,
Pugh,
Warren Clark.
David Pugh was Ned.
David Pugh, Ned, yes, who was nearly blind, bless him.
And Garfield Morgan, who played Desmond.
Yes, don't remember him. That might have been after me.
And Madeline Thomas, who played Mrs. Radcliffe.
Yes.
Warren Clark played Paul England.
Yes. Yes, I love Warren Clark. He was great.
Josephine was Edna, but of course, it was always known as Mrs. H, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, Mrs. H, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I found about her, what was great about her, was that just that whole thing of he'd come out with these intelligent quips and she just didn't get them at all. That was really good. That was really funny.
Yeah.
No, it's really good series, I think. And you're right, they don't really repeat it that much. I used to like the theme tune was great as well.
Da 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 da.
Yes.
Da 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 da. Isn't that it? Da 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 da. Dum dum da. I could go on.
Well done. So, how does it, looking back on your career then, obviously you say it wasn't necessarily a happy time, but it was obviously an important time for you because this was a big show which was, you know, everyone recognised you from it. How does it sit in your career, do you think, now?
It was a very important part of my career, obviously. But things I did since then were sort of more important in many ways. I mean, you know, I was at the National Theatre. I nearly said the Grand National. The National Theatre for 3 or 4 years and did, you know, Guys and Dolls and Beggar's Opera and Schweik. And those, working with Richard Eyre, I think, was a real highlight for me. I was in the original musical of Hair. That was a very important thing for me. And I also was in the original cast of the Rocky Horror Show. So that, you know, those were as important. I would say Shelley, Rocky and Hair were the most important things. All the other, but you know, after doing Shelley, I could then get work because everybody knew who I was.
Yeah, it helps.
It really helped. It really helped a lot. So from there, all the TV that I did, you know, really stemmed from Shelley, I think, you know.
So you don't mind talking about it then?
I'm very grateful for it.
Well, I only ask that because I'm not going to mention any names, but there are quite a few people, musicians and actors, who the thing that made them, they never want to talk about. It's like, what they can't talk about. It's weird, isn't it? Weird.
I know. Well, that's the number one on that is Tim Curry. You know, who played Frankenfurter in Rocky.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he says it ruined him. it ruined his career, is what he feels about it, because he could never do anything to top it.
Yeah, and also know? People, there are certain situations where people become typecast as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
With different things. Now, you went on, actually, to star in a soap as well. You were in one of the soaps, weren't you? You were in Family Affairs for a while.
I was, for nearly 5 years, yes. That was a very interesting experience as well.
Because you've not been in any of the other soaps, have you? It's just that one you were in.
No, right? I haven't been in any of the other. No Corrie, no EastEnders, and I wouldn't now, having done a soap.
Yeah.
I know exactly how it's done and how it's made.
It's hard work, and isn't it? Hard
it's
work.
Blooming hard work. And it's quite difficult because you never know what you're going to be doing. I mean, especially as far as Family Affairs was concerned, you know, you'd say, right, I've got 6 scenes to do tomorrow, and that's what you'd learn, and you'd turn up and you'd get to the studio and they'd say, well, no, actually, we're not doing all those scenes now because so-and-so can't make it, is not coming today, so you can only do 2 of those scenes, and then you've got these 4 other scenes, which I hadn't worked on. Great, thanks. You know, so it was very difficult that way. And you know, it's hard because if you're on a storyline, you're there day and night while they do it. And then suddenly you're off and you might be quite happy to have some time off. But mostly it's like, oh, it's hurry up and wait, you know, hurry up and wait. An awful lot of sitting around in studios. Oh, I think I'm doing that scene at 3 o'clock. No, we're not doing that scene at 3 o'clock now. Oh, well, when are we doing it? Well, you might do it at 5 o'clock, or we might put it off till tomorrow. You know, it's like, whew, hard, hard work. But, you know, I was very grateful for that job. That came just at the right time as well for me.
And I think, you know, I mean, it didn't, you know, they got rid of it eventually, but I actually think he did quite well in his early years and was a pretty good drama, regular drama, actually.
It was. It's just the production team were a little wanting. You know, all the sound people and the camera people and all of that and the lighting and the props but something about the production team, they didn't really have good control of it, I don't think. And some of the storylines as well, you thought, oh my gosh, I can't say that. Don't you remember just a month or so ago, I was saying the complete opposite or doing the complete opposite.
What's the most bizarre storyline that you had in Family Affairs, then, do you think?
Well, I suppose when my husband died of a heart attack in front of me, that was pretty excruciating. From nowhere, no one had mentioned there was anything wrong with him, and suddenly we were playing a death scene. He was doing his dying swan act on the floor. It was a lot of fun, and it was a nice lot of money. And once again, I couldn't walk anywhere without being recognised. I found I was mostly recognised by young black women with children, who obviously were at home a lot because it was shown in the day. And they were absolutely crazy about it. They absolutely loved it. All my fans were young black women, you know, which was hilarious, I thought. But that was a good experience. I enjoyed it. I mean, there were some characters, but it was a huge cast, a huge company. So you could happily be friends with one lot of people and not have any contact with a lot of other people that you didn't like so much, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's been lovely talking to you. What are you up to these days then, Belinda?
I'm a granny. I'm happily retired. I retired from acting in 2012. My agent didn't believe me at the time. He kept ringing me up and saying, oh, I've got the part. I can only see you in this part. You've got to go for this part. And I would say, no, I've decided, I've had enough. Because I just got very tired of doing, you know, a granny on Holby City and an auntie on Casualty and a little bit here and a little bit there. It didn't really do it for me anymore. And I didn't have the energy to do like a musical or something like that. So my husband and I started a dog business. We're both very good with dogs, and we had our own dogs, and we're very into training, and people would see us in the park. I had collies. I had 4 collies, actually, and my husband had a borzoi, if you know what that is. It's a Russian wolfhound. And so we started this dog business, just training, walking, boarding, and that we did it for 15 years, and it was absolutely fantastic. My husband still does it. He only walks big, difficult dogs, so he always has four large. He's still got a Borzoi. I've still got one collie, but I don't do it anymore. I retired because I need time to look after my granddaughter.
Fabulous, fabulous. That sounds
who
great.
Turns two on Sunday.
Oh. And has she seen any of your stuff on TV? Have you shown
No, not at all, not at all. No, my kids even weren't that interested.
Really?
They weren't really that bothered, you know.
Okay, well, it's lovely to chat to you about a programme which I think a lot of people do fondly remember in different ways, because obviously people like me were growing up at the time, so we remember it in a particular way. There'll be other people who were adults at the time. When you look back at it, though, I know it was a difficult period in a way.
That difficult. What? I mean, I really respected Howl, and I enjoyed the process, the work process. Yeah. It's just we weren't good friends, that's all.
Yeah. What's your lasting memory of it, though? I mean, apart from singing the theme tune, which you obviously still know very well. And presumably that used to come on, did it, before you started acting?
Yes, that's when your stomach would start churning over. Yeah. You think, oh, and any second, as soon as it stopped, you knew you had to
start the scene. So it's in your head, isn't it, that? Definitely.
It was always in your head,
Just tell us anything that stands out whenever you think about it. If somebody says, I mean, obviously you've answered my questions, but if somebody was to say to you, you know, what's your lasting memory of doing that series, what would it be?
I think I grew up quite a lot. I think it helped me to grow up. I suddenly realised this is not all lights and stars and twinkles. This is serious. This is work. And I wanted to honour the writer particularly because I thought he wrote so beautifully. And I think that's what I remember more than anything, that it was good work. And I was very grateful and very lucky to do it.
So just finally then, you mentioned, you hinted at the beginning that you do have some things left from those days, and you got the dungarees and various things left. where are they? Do you bring them out now every now and again? I'm disappointed you didn't turn up in them today.
I'm sorry. No, I haven't worn the dungarees. The dungarees have gone. I did wear them quite a lot when I was pregnant.
Okay.
They were very handy then, but I think they're long gone somewhere to a car boot sale or a charity shop or something.
Do you think fashions have got better?
Well, you know, I think fashion always goes round in a circle.
Yeah, it does. You're
it?
Right there. Yeah, definitely.
And so we're sort of going back. I mean, I see a lot of kids wearing flares.
Yes, yeah. No,
you know,
absolutely.
That we used to call bell bottoms back in the day.
Yeah. More and more men have got beards and things again.
More men have got beards. Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to think. I do have a skirt that I wear, a lovely pleated skirt that I wear from time to time. I think it was. They used to take me to Brown's in South Moulton Street to buy a lot of Fran's clothes. And so some of them were very good, not the kind of thing that ever wear out or go out of fashion even. No. You just team them up with something different and they look completely different.
And were you, do you think, anything like Fran in any way, shape or form?
Yeah, I think I was a bit like Fran. I'm on my third husband. No. Yeah, I definitely, I think, I don't know, maybe I learned it from Fran. A bit of bullying doesn't do any harm, I find.
Belinda, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's nice to go back down memory lane. I'm sorry I can't remember more, but it was the 70s, you know.
It's a long time ago, absolutely. Thank
it
you.
It was. That's thank great. You.
Ashley was talking to Belinda Sinclair, who played Fran in Shelley in the 70s and 80s. And don't forget, there's more than 200 hours of interviews, reunions, quizzes, as well as new comedy, drama and panel shows on the Distinct Nostalgia podcast. Just scroll through our archive wherever you get your podcasts anytime. And if you've a suggestion for an interview or reunion, contact us at info@madeinmanchester.tv.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Distinct Nostalgia is researched by Andrew Edwards and produced by Ashley Byrne. A Made in Manchester production.